Welcome to the Kansas Cyclist Podcast, part of the Kansas Cyclist website and the Eero Podcast Network, podcasts that inform by focusing both on the news and the people behind the news. My name is Edward Eero, and together with Randy Reza, webmaster of the Kansas Cyclist, we are your hosts for Episode 2 for Sunday, April 26, 2009. In this episode, we are going to interview Dale Crawford, a park planner and project coordinator for the City of Olathe, the former advocacy director for the Johnson County Bicycle Club, and the current vice president of Can Bike Walk. We also have a special segment with Eric Rogers, who will talk about Bike Week. The Kansas Cyclist Podcast provides news and information about bicycling in Kansas and neighboring states. The podcast is a new feature of the Kansas Cyclist website, which is found at www.kansascyclist.com. Links to the Kansas Cyclist Podcast can be found at the Kansas Cyclist website and at the Eero Podcast Network on the web at epn.eero.com. In each episode of the Kansas Cyclist Podcast, we will recap news and information about bicycling, talk about upcoming rides, let you in on new trails to try, listen to your feedback, and answer any questions you have. We also will be interviewing interesting individuals involved in bicycling here in the heartland of the United States. We welcome your feedback, so please write to podcast@kansascyclist.com and send in your comments or suggestions. Let's go to news and information. Randy, as always, has lots of new information on the Kansas Cyclist website. Randy, how about some highlights?
Okay, we're going to open with some sad news today. On April 15th, 44-year-old Roy Dale Pruitt of Wellington, Kansas, was found lying on the street next to his bike, unconscious, and he later died at the hospital. Police say that Roy rode his bike into a park pickup, fell over, and hit his head on the curb. There's no word on whether or not he was wearing a helmet, but judging by the result, he probably wasn't. Police also say they suspect that alcohol played a role. And not to get preachy here, but we can draw a couple lessons from this. One, don't drink and ride. You might think you're safer riding a bike rather than driving a car. And it's probably true that you're less of a danger to those around you, but alcohol impairs your judgment, slows your reaction time, and affects your balance, none of which are good things when you're trying to ride a bike. And secondly, this type of low-speed collision is just the type of accident where a helmet can save your life. And I can offer a bit of personal testimony on that. I crashed mountain biking a few months ago, and I hit my head pretty hard on the ground. And my head survived without even a bruise, but my helmet wasn't so lucky. It was cracked, and I found a stick embedded in the styrofoam. That stick could easily have been stuck in my head, so I was lucky, and I learned my lesson. Wear your helmet.
Yeah, it's tragic news, and but I had a similar experience. Actually, my wife, when we were living in Michigan, we were on a rails to trail ride from Kalamazoo, Michigan to the lake. And her front wheel caught something, and we were not going that fast because we had my young son with us in a Burley on my bike in the back, but she just fell over real quickly, low speed, but had a helmet on. And you could see from the helmet, if that had been her head, that she could have really suffered a serious injury. So I do agree with you most definitely that please wear your helmet.
Yeah, the accidents happen so quickly. Moving on from Norman, Oklahoma, comes news of a new bicycle route map. Now, this is not really news in and of itself. A lot of cities produce bike maps, but those maps are usually targeted solely at recreational riders, and they show multi-use trails and things like that. The big news here is that the Norman map was designed for bicycle commuting, not recreation. I think that's pretty significant. That's one community that seems to be taking the concept of bicycles as transportation seriously. Another rather interesting development was a recent visit to Emporia by Kansas Senator Sam Brownback, speaking on the subject of tourism and ways to increase the number of visitors to the Flint Hills. Brownback specifically mentioned biking trails as a great opportunity for people to get out and enjoy nature. Given that Brownback is expected to make a run for the Kansas governorship and that Kansas has had real difficulty in getting large trail projects moving, it's a hopeful sign that he's now endorsed the development of bicycling trails. So we'll have to keep an eye on that issue for the upcoming election cycle. In Kansas City, cyclists received some good news recently when the Missouri Department of Transportation announced that due to federal stimulus funds, they were going to be able to complete the refurb of the Heart of America Bridge over the Missouri River sooner than expected. And included as part of that would be a new bike ped lane on the bridge. This is important because it will be the first safe passage over the river for bicyclists and pedestrians. Construction is expected to be completed by the end of 2010. Wichita has also taken a small step forward with the opening of the Midtown bike path. It's only a mile and a half in length, but it's an important connection between bike lanes and multi-use paths in that part of the city. And judging by the picture, it's also a rather attractive path with Victorian-style light poles, brick columns, and steel archways, giving the path a sort of a turn-of-the-century look. Wichita cyclists seem to be excited about this new path, and they should be. In advocacy news, Colorado's bicycle safety bill, which had earlier in the year passed both the House and the Senate, but in slightly different versions, has now made its way out of committee, and the two versions have now been reconciled, essentially keeping the original Senate version. The bill now goes back to the House for another vote. Cyclists in Colorado are hopeful for a quick and positive outcome.
That's great news. And remember to keep up with the latest bicycling news from Kansas and neighboring states. Please subscribe to the Kansas Cycling News at thekansascyclist.com, and you can subscribe to that by using an RSS feed reader or email. And for even more news, follow the Kansas Cyclist on Twitter at twitter.com/KansasCyclist. Next up is our upcoming ride sections. There are many, many rides that are detailed at the Kansas Cyclist webcast. So, Randy, tell us about some interesting ones that are coming up.
Well, we have a lot of upcoming rides, and we're just not going to be able to cover them all in detail. So I'm going to try to hit a few of the highlights and trust that you'll visit Kansas Cyclist website for more information on these rides.
Guess we're in the season.
We are indeed. Let's start in Kansas, where the first weekend of the month features the Bull Creek Bike Bash in Spring Hill, the Kansas Fat Tire Festival at Lake Wilson, and the Rope'em Ride in Hayes, and the Great Escape in El Dorado. The Fat Tire Festival is of particular interest, at least to me, because it's a three-day event on what many consider to be one of the premier trail systems in Kansas. It's a weekend of bike riding and camping, with both recreational and competitive rides planned. It sounds like a lot of fun to me. On May 9th, we have the M-Day bicycle ride out of Minneapolis, Kansas, and that's in the north central part of the state. And on May 17th, we have two real showcase rides. In Topeka, there's the Capitol Classic, which starts and ends at the Capitol Building. And in Wichita, we have the Wicked Wind 100. I haven't ridden this yet, but somehow the name itself just makes me want to give it a try. The Capitol Classic is put on by the Kaw Valley Bicycle Club, and the Wicked Wind is organized by the Oz Bicycle Club. Also on the 17th, we have the Tour de Florence, which is a 40-mile mountain bike ride in the Flint Hills, which should really be spectacular by that time of the year. Memorial Day weekend is the 33rd running of the Cottonwood 200. This is a three-day bicycle tour through the Flint Hills, starting in Topeka and overnighting in Council Grove. On day two, they make a run to Cottonwood Falls with lunch provided by the excellent Emma Chase Cafe. Taking place just 2 weeks before the start of biking across Kansas, many cyclists use this ride as a tune-up for the annual cross-state tour. The last week in the month is Cycle Casa out of Manhattan, the Tour de Cure out of El Dorado, and the Lone Star Century put on by the Johnson County Bike Club. The JCBC puts on three big rides during the year, and many people consider the Lone Star their favorite. It starts in Gardner and heads west into Douglas County. Good roads, a few challenging hills, and great sags.
Yeah, it's one of my favorites. I've done that actually 4 years, three times as the Century length. And JCBC really does do a great job with, I think their sags are well spaced out. They have very good traffic control at the major intersections. And I also like it because it seems to be before the big heat wave hits us. But of course, I probably just jinxed that by saying it.
Of course. The other big ride happening that weekend is Dirty Kanza. Many folks call this the ultimate gravel grinder. It's a 200-mile gravel ride road race starting and ending in Emporia and meandering throughout the central Flint Hills. Each rider is on their own with no sags, no support, and very few commercial services. It takes a lot of guts just to attempt this ride, and finishing it is an incredible accomplishment.
Whoa.
I had considered riding that this year, but I don't know. I either chickened out or I thought better. I'm not sure. I'm going to do support for another rider. So we'll see how that goes.
Yeah.
Moving on, some other big rides around the region include the Tour de Toad in Conway, Arkansas, the Buena Vista Bike Fest and the Iron Horse Classic in Colorado, the Trans-Iowa Ride, which is another gravel ride, and Trail to a Cure, which is an AIDS fundraiser that takes place on the Katy Trail in Missouri. The Katy is also the venue for the Peddler's Jamboree, which is billed as Missouri's first bike-powered and camping festival. It takes place May 23rd and 24th, starting and ending in Columbia and overnighting in Boonville, with food, music, and, of course, the great scenery of the Katy Trail. Nebraska, we have the Spoke and Hub Century in Bellevue, the Oak Creek Valley Ride in Valparaiso, and the Tour de Cure out of Springfield. Oklahoma offers us the Tour de Tulsa, the Valley Rally in Paul's Valley, the Tour of the Wichitas in the southeastern part of the state, and Tulsa is also home of the Tour de Cure in mid-May and the Tulsa Tough, a three-day cycling festival in late May. Now, that's a pretty big list, and it doesn't even include many races. As always, there's a full schedule of road races and mountain bike races throughout the region.
And today, we have a special segment as we've invited Eric Rogers, who is the bike with the Bike Week Group, formerly known as Bike to Work. Eric is a resident of Kansas City, Missouri, and he works in Kansas City, Kansas at the University of Kansas Medical Center as a web developer in the IT department. Eric has been, he describes himself as a bicycle, transit, and walking commuter for the past 10 years. And is a member of the Missouri Bicycle Federation Board of Directors as their legislative chair. He's also the chair of the Kansas City, Missouri Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory Council and the coordinator of the Car Free Challenge. Bike Week activities are taking place May 9th through 16th. Welcome, Eric. We are so glad you could join us today.
Great. Thanks to be here.
You describe yourself as a bicycle, transit, and walking commuter. Tell our listeners exactly what that means. And have you been actually able to commute to work this way year round?
Yes, I live fairly close to work, so it's easy for me, but I usually walk about half the time and bike to work about the other half of the time. And then my previous job, it was a little further away, so I usually alternated between bicycling and transit. So it's been, I've been doing about 10 years now.
Have you used the, I know some of the buses now have the carriers on the front with bicycles. Have you done that?
Yeah, I do that quite a bit. Works pretty well. It's pretty easy to use once you get the hang of it. And it's really helpful for extending how far you can go. And I'm in a neighborhood that isn't quite as close to a lot of bus lines as some of the others, so it's really handy to be able to ride like a mile or two to the bus line and then just hop on the bus,
mm-hmm.
the bike, and then I have it there when I get off at the other end.
Well, I think that's a good lead in because it looks like you've been really living the life. But tell us some highlights that are planned for Bike Week.
Sure. We've got a lot of stuff going on. We're trying to feature a little bit of everything on the local bike scene in Kansas City. So we're trying to cover events with commuting and recreation, mountain biking, racing. Our big kind of marquee event that we do every year is the Car Free Challenge, where we challenge people to see how many car trips they can replace with biking or walking, transit, carpooling. So people record their miles all week, and then we give out prizes for people in all the different categories. People can form teams either at work or with clubs or other groups. And so in addition to that, we've got a lot of bike events going on. We've got several group rides where people can ride with some other folks if they want to get used to riding in town or in traffic. A lot of beginner rides, and then we have a few classes for bicycle maintenance or just kind of generally finding the right bike mm-hmm. to fit you. Then we've got an alley cat race and a lot of stuff like track stand competition, stuff like that. Just a little bit of everything.
Yeah, what is the alley cat?
The alley cat is it's called the Tour de Cowtown. It's an annual event that Acme Bikes and the Greater Kansas City Bike Federation put on every year, and they do it during Bike Week. And it's an alley cat race is kind of an urban scavenger hunt on bike. So you'll show up for the race, and they'll give you a list of things you've got to collect or find. And the Tour to Cowtown is kind of like a trivia scavenger hunt. So a lot of the actual things that you have to go find, they're questions about Kansas City. So it's almost like a little riddle, and they'll say, okay, who's, you know, this famous mayor, where's his tombstone? And you go find the cemetery where he's at.
Oh.
So you end up kind of touring all around the city and, collecting the answers to all the questions, and then first team back, wins the race. Yeah.
It sounds like a lot of activities. Now, there's a Women on Wheels festival also as part of the week.
Yeah, that's an event that's organized by a lot of the bike shops and then the Women's Intersport Network. And that's kind of a additional event that's going on at the same time as Bike Week. And they've got a goal of just getting more women bicycling. So they're putting on a big bike festival with all kinds of things like bike fittings and clinics on maintenance. I think they're going to have a lot of the race teams there and the triathlon groups and things like that.
Tell us a bit about the genesis for Bike Week. Now, is this the first year you've changed the name from Bike to Work?
This is probably about the fourth year that we've done a formal Bike Week program. A couple years before that, there was an event going on called the Bicycle Commuter Challenge, and it was really just the challenge part of it. There weren't any of the other events going on. And it was the Mid-America Regional Council that was originally organizing that event, and they a few years ago they weren't able to do it anymore. So myself and a couple other people picked it up, kind of at the last minute, just to make sure that it didn't die out. And then we were fortunate enough to have Deb Ridgway, who at the time was at Bridging the Gap, who really kind of stepped up and took a leadership role and organized a larger bike week and a whole series of events around the week. And so we've been going from there for about, this will be probably the fourth year. Mm-hmm. I think.
And there's a press conference kicking off the week too with the mayor?
Yeah, there'll be a press conference Monday morning on May 11th. That's 9 o'clock in the Power and Light District. And we did the same thing last year, and that's when Mayor Funkhauser announced the goal for Kansas City to become recognized as a platinum level bicycle friendly city by the year 2020, which the Bike Friendly Cities is a national designation. It's administered through the League of American Bicyclists. And so they kind of rate your city on all kinds of metrics about whether, you know, how many bike lanes you have and how many miles of trails and things like that. And platinum level is the highest. And so Kansas City's setting a goal to reach that by 2020. And then, so this press conference on Monday, the mayor's going to kind of give an update of where we're at and the action plan for the coming year to help move us towards that goal.
Is there anything specific that the city has to do to obtain that?
There's a lot of different things. Like I said, it involves measuring things like how many bike lanes you have and trails and whether you've got bicycle planning professionals on staff in the city and things like bike racks and other bike parking facilities. The bike racks on the buses, that's another thing that they look at. We've actually got one bike-friendly city already in the region, Shawnee, Kansas. They're bronze level. I think it goes bronze, silver, gold, platinum. And they've had that for a few years. And then a little further out, Lawrence, Kansas is also a bronze level bike-friendly city. And so Kansas City, Missouri is going for it here in the next few years. And I believe there's several cities in Northeast Johnson County that are talking about trying to get together and apply all as one group of cities.
So around the metro area then?
Yeah, yep. Yeah. Mayor Steve Petrin in Roland Park, the mayor there, he's a bicyclist and he's trying to organize a lot of the cities around him. So like Mission, Merriam, Prairie Village, and I think they're going to try to apply as a group of cities there in that part of the county.
Is there any place else around the country that does that?
Collection cities? I know, I believe Tucson, Arizona, I think they applied as an entire metro area.
That's interesting.
Yeah, but I don't think they have as many suburbs. I think they only have a few cities in that region. But usually it's, as far as I understand it, it's usually a specific cities. So Shawnee and Lawrence would be the closest ones to us.
Can you tell us a little more details on the Car Free Challenge? How's that work? People just go to kcbike.info to sign up?
Yeah, they just go onto the website and sign up.
They create an account and
just
start logging the miles?
Create a quick account with their email address, and then every day they can just log the miles or the trips that they've taken, and they can log bike trips, walking trips, carpool, bus, and then we also ask them to specify if it's a work trip or a non-work trip. We found in the last couple of years that for a lot of people, it's hard to bike to work or the bus doesn't work for them. I think the statistic is the average commute in Kansas City is about 20 miles each way. So for a lot of people, it just doesn't work out. But we also emphasize the non-work trips. So going to the grocery store, or the movies, or the library. You might work far from home, but you probably have a lot of errands you do close to home that you could easily do by bike or even walking. So we encourage people to record all of those trips. And if they want to, people can form a team. A lot of employers have teams. So your employer might already have a team that you could join, or you can get together with a group of friends, or most of the bike clubs around the city have a team. Or you can just compete on your own.
Are there prizes given out for the winners?
Yeah, there
sure are.
Yeah, there's a lot of different prizes. We get a lot of stuff donated from bike shops. So we usually give out things like helmets, lights, bike locks, messenger bags, a lot of things like that. Yeah, gift certificates.
So there's prizes for the different categories then, individual versus team versus companies? Or just
we'll do prizes for the cyclists with the most miles. And we'll do both experienced bike commuters and people that are doing this for the first time. So even if you're doing it for the first time, you've got a shot at winning some prizes.
That's cool.
And then we also do prizes in the other categories for the pedestrians and the bus riders and the carpoolers.
Is this information used for any other purpose other than the contest? The total mileage, the types of different trips?
No, it's pretty much just used for the contest. We do kind of aggregate some of the data to look at a little bit at the commuting patterns. So we've seen a little bit of useful information about how people are commuting in our region. It's probably not statistically significant to help planners with what they do, but it's kind of a little bit of a snapshot of what's going on. So we found there's some pretty interesting patterns as far as bike commuters. There's a big group of people that commute kind of in that Waldo to the Plaza to downtown corridor, and then another big group of people kind of parallel to 35, so from northeast Johnson County into downtown. And then we've got a big group of people that kind of commute within the city of Olathe. We have a really big team at Garmin, so they've got a lot of folks there.
Speaking of the run from Johnson County into downtown, do you know if Noah Dunker's running the commuter convoy again?
Yeah, he sure is.
Information on his website, I guess.
Yeah, I don't know if we have the information quite published yet. We're still finishing up the website this week. But yeah, I believe Noah rides in from Lenexa.
Right.
Lenexa to downtown, yeah.
How many people did you get last year?
Last year we had about 800 people that participated who made at least one trip. They did about a total of 40,000 miles between those 800 people.
Wow.
And then we also calculate information about the emission savings that those people totaled up. So those people traveling 40,000 miles in that 1 week period, that we think that equated to about almost 40,000 pounds of carbon dioxide that wasn't put into the atmosphere. And at the price of gas that time last year, we think was probably about $8,000 that people saved in that week. So we think that there's some pretty good savings in terms of money and in terms of pollution just in a week. And so we kind of take that as a lesson that if we all did it a little bit more throughout the year, those savings would add up pretty quickly.
Eric, has it increased year to year, the number of people that are participating?
Yeah, it has. We've doubled our participation about the last 3 years in a row. Mm-hmm. So we started out with about 150 or 200 people a few years ago, and we were up to 800 last year. We've still got a long way to go, though. For a city our size, we probably ought to have about 7,000 or 8,000 people participating. So we've still got a lot of room for growth.
Hey, do you think having the Tour of Missouri has helped raise the awareness of bicycling?
Yeah, I think it has quite a bit. Kind of people I know that know I'm a cyclist, they seem to bring it up more after they've heard about the Tour of Missouri. And then I know it's been really helpful in terms of raising the visibility among people like politicians and engineers and some of the people that we need to advocate for better facilities for bicyclists. So it's definitely raised the visibility that way.
Mm-hmm. Well, Eric, we'd love to have you back again because we know that you're involved with many things, including other things at kcbike.info and also the Missouri Bicycle Federation. But we wanted to be sure to include you in this podcast because we know the timing and wanted to get that publicity out. So we'd love to have you back. But is there anything else that you'd like to say about Bike Week?
Just say that we're starting on May 9th, and if people can go to the website ahead of time, it's www.kcbike.info, and look for the Bike Week banner, and go ahead and sign up for the Car Free Challenge, and come back on May 9th to log your miles, and then take a look at our calendar of events so you can see what's going on that might interest you, whether it's a group ride or a class or some other kind of activity. And just hope to see you on your bike that week.
Eric, thanks so much for taking the time to be with us, and the very best of luck with the Bike Week activities and all the things that you're involved with. We appreciate folks like you that are very involved in bicycling and raising that awareness. So thank you very much.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
For a complete listing of upcoming rides and races, visit the events section of the Kansas Cyclist at kansascyclist.com. These listings will have more details on how to sign up for the events with registration links and links back to the ride organizers' websites. Okay, our other feature is new trails to try. Like so much other information, Randy has links to many, if not all, the riding trails in Kansas and adjoining states on the website. Randy, are there any that you would like to detail for our listeners today?
I have a new one this time. This one's actually so new, I don't even have a listing for it yet on Kansas Cyclist. The community of Melvern, which is located in east central Kansas near Melvern Lake, recently celebrated the opening of their new riverfront park and trail system, which features 7 miles of trails, most of which are mountain bike single track, but there's also several miles of paved trails that pass near the wetlands along the Martesine River. The park and the trail system was created on 40 acres of abandoned land, and was built by volunteers from Kansas Corps, which is a student group out of Fort Hays State, and by the Kansas Trails Council in cooperation with a local Friends of the Trail volunteer group. The park and trails were thus built at no direct cost to the community and have the potential to be a tremendous asset for this small town. The new trails, along with the 17 miles of existing trails at the nearby reservoir, make this an inviting destination for mountain bikers. I hope to get a chance to visit the trails in the near future myself.
And then, so there's 17 miles of existing, and then there'll be new miles?
There's 17 miles at the Melvern Lake Reservoir, mm-hmm. which is just a few miles from the town itself, and then 7 miles within town.
I see. Well, that does sound good. Since our first episode, we did hear back from a few of our listeners and wanted to thank them for those that took the time to provide this feedback, as it is very, very helpful. And Randy and I, really our intent is to improve this podcast and make it useful for everyone involved in our cycling community. Randy, is there any feedback that you would like to talk about in particular on this podcast?
Several listeners commented on the sound quality and the pacing of the podcast, particularly with my segments. Since then, I've gotten a new microphone, so hopefully that'll address the sound quality issues on my end. And as far as the pacing problems, well, I hope you've heard an improvement there as well. I've tried to tighten up the news and ride listings to make them more concise and focused.
Today we are very fortunate to have Dale Crawford, park planner and project coordinator for the City of Olathe, the former advocacy director for the Johnson County Bicycle Club, and the current vice president of Can Bike Walk. Dale tells us that he has been bicycling nearly continuous since his first bicycle, a red Western Flyer, when he was 5 years old. Dale came to associate the bicycle with freedom, mobility, fun, and adventure, exploring the streets, alleys, and country roads in and around his hometown of Pratt, Kansas. He expanded his bicycling usage while in college to include commuting while attending Kansas State University in the early and mid-1970s. Upon completion of college in 1976, Dale moved to Prairie Village, Kansas, to begin a 33-year landscape architecture career as a consultant in both Kansas City and Oklahoma City, as well as the campus landscape architect at the University of Oklahoma. For the last 22 years, he has worked for the City of Olathe. At the city, Dale has been able to merge his passion for bicycling, desire for public service, and his career with the development and implementation of Olathe's Trails and Greenways Master Plan and creation of Metro Green. In addition to many public parks, Dale has been involved in the design and installation of bike lanes on 143rd Street, Dennis Avenue, Woodland Road, Ridgeland, and the soon-to-be-installed bike lanes on Lone Elm Road and 127th Street. Although yet to be adopted, the draft Olathe Bicycle Transportation Plan could guide Olathe to becoming a future League of American Bicyclists bicycle-friendly community, if implemented. Dale's involvement in bicycle advocacy began as he realized cities, including Olathe, were ignoring the needs of bicyclists when they built new roads and upgraded old ones. About the same time, he happened upon a Johnson County Bicycle Club weekend ride while out on one of his favorite solo rides. He subsequently joined the bike club in 1993 and soon was talking to members at club meetings and writing newsletter articles trying to convince the club and its members of the advantages of becoming an advocacy organization for bicyclists and alerting the club of upcoming projects affecting popular bicycling routes. In 1996, Dale began a 13-year stint as a Johnson County Bicycle Club board member and has represented the club and the bicycling community ever since at countless public meetings, at various city halls, the Mid-America Regional Council, county governments, state legislative hearings, and even lobbying in Washington, D.C. Dale has served on the Mid-America Regional Council's Bicycle and Pedestrian Advocacy Committee and the Metro Green Technical Committee since their inception. More recently, he served on the Kansas Department of Transportation's Metropolitan Transportation Workgroup during the development of the state's latest transportation plan called T-Link. He currently serves as vice president of Can Bike Walk. Welcome, Dale. Randy and I were talking before the show, and I believe we all met for the first time during the Journey of Hope ride across the United States when we joined the riders as they were leaving Olathe, riding through the Kansas City area. And that really makes this even more meaningful to be doing the podcast with you today.
Yes, it was. That was an enjoyable ride. It was, you know, an amazing group of young men that were out, and I'm not so sure they were all cyclists when they started, but I think they all became cyclists by the time they finished crossing the country. So that was really interesting.
When you go all the way across the country, absolutely. So, well, Dale, since you have been involved with bicycling, do you know whether the total number of bicyclists has increased or decreased, and how does that impact bicycle planning and advocacy efforts?
You know, I don't think anybody really in the metro has a firm, you know, statistical validation that, yes, bicycling is increasing. I think what you have to look at is, you know, what are the stores doing? and you know just how many people are you seeing in the road, and what you see around your town, and you know just the popularity of trails is growing. So you know, obviously something out there is happening. We think that it is an increase in the number of cyclists. You know, although in the Kansas City area, you know, any increase is a good increase because we started out with such low numbers. So even if we double our numbers, we're still probably below a lot of other regions in proportion of people that actually are bicycling. But I think it has. I think it has. We see it here in Olathe, definitely, where I live and work. And so hopefully the community is reflecting that.
It certainly seems that way on, you know, when you go out on rides, especially on the weekends. I was out riding Saturday and ran into, I think, three different groups of people out there. So it has increased. How do you get more individual bicyclists to become involved in advocacy efforts? And has this been a problem over the years for you in your efforts on advocacy?
That's probably been the biggest challenge and frustration and yet at the same time reward. At first, I felt like, you know, back to the early 90s, I think there was two of us, another gentleman, Art Goff, in the Kansas City Bicycle Club, and myself. I think we were the only ones, you know, saying anything about things can be better. We can have a better environment, a safer environment for bicycling. You know, but, you know, to make government respond, you have to get involved. And, you know, it's a challenge to get people involved in something new. It's taken us a while, and it's been unfortunate in that at the same time we've been trying, not just Art and I, but you know, along the way other people have gotten on board through the years. And it's been frustrating in the fact that if you look at some of the other, what are now considered very bicycle-friendly cities, such as Portland, Oregon, in the early 90s at about the same time, they were considered one of the worst cycling cities in the country. And now they are probably the premier major, you know, large city to bicycle in. They have the highest of the major cities in the League of American Bicyclists Bicycle Friendly Community Awards. Yeah, so, however, there they had an extremely active, almost activist-oriented community. And that just shows what can happen when bicyclists do get involved in the decisions that their various community leaders make.
Was it through the clubs then that they got the individual cyclists to become involved? Do you feel that that's the key to?
Well, I don't think so. I actually think in Portland they started straight from the grassroots. And however, here it seemed to be the path of least resistance to get started was through the clubs. They already had a system of communication with their members. They were already, you know, at some point they were organized as far as doing rides and social activities. So they already had a structure. And I think both Art and I, you know, saw that, you know, that's a mechanism to begin getting the word out. And it has worked. It's just taken longer than we had hoped, of course. But if you're going to be in advocacy, you know, you learn to be patient, and you learn to persevere over time. And eventually, and I think we're beginning to see that come around. One of the things that's really helped is the successes of the Missouri Bicycle Federation. And those folks, particularly in the Kansas City area, on the Kansas side, have seen the successes that an organization like that can accomplish firsthand. And so they're beginning to get involved. The light's finally turning on and on with a lot more people. And we're beginning to see that. You know, things just as this podcast, as Randy's website, Kansas Cyclist. Those type things like that are a sign that things are changing.
Politically, do you think governments are beginning to accept bicycling as a viable form of transportation?
In small sections at a time. One of the challenges we do have here in Kansas City, and it's not unique to Kansas City. I think the folks here like to think that it is, but it's not. Every major city is comprised of multiple jurisdictions, whether it be multiple counties, you know, numerous cities. You know, we're also blessed or cursed, as it may be, with the state line dividing the city into, or the metro into. So, you know, we have pockets, like Shawnee has for many years, seen the advantages of designing their community for bicycling. And they were probably the leaders. Lawrence has seen it as well. And other cities are beginning to, although most have fallen into the trap that trails provide everything that a bicyclist needs. And that's really not the case. There are great facilities. There are tremendous amenities for a community. They are a measure of a city's quality of life. But they're really not true transportation, or when they do provide transportation, it's what I call by coincidence, in that the trail is designed for one purpose, and it may provide a linkage for some people, but it's really not the ones in Kansas City anyway that are built thus far. The majority are primarily recreation, and so the transportation has been potential has been somewhat limited. That's not to say that that can't change. We are beginning to see some communities, more communities, looking more seriously at it. Roland Park, I think, is working on a plan. The city of Olathe is working on a plan. Kansas City, Missouri has adopted a plan for bicycle transportation. And so once those plans, they all need time to get implemented. But once we begin to see some of that actually fall into place on the roads, then we'll begin to see other communities falling in place as they see those cities making strides and becoming more desirable places to live.
So you see that as the major benefit to a city becoming designated as bicycle friendly, attracting young professionals?
Well, not necessarily. I wouldn't say necessarily just young, but I would say just, you know, people of all ages. If you the most successful communities like Portland, I mentioned it early, and Minneapolis, if you ride around there, you will see people of all ages on their bicycles, because it creates a safer environment for bicycling, and that's people's first concern, particularly for those folks that may have a desire to bicycle, but they just don't feel safe to on the roads. And so they stay to the trails, and so they really don't get beyond the recreation advantages of trails. But when it comes to transportation, they're really hesitant and intimidated by the auto-centric roadway system. And, you know, for many of them, with their whatever level their ride skill may be, there's just reason for being concerned. It can be a dangerous environment. If they don't know how the proper way to ride on a road. So,
Can you tell us about the Olathe Trails and the Greenway Master Plan and your involvement in that?
Yes, I can. I would like to say I was the sole creator of it, but there was actually a plan, an unofficial concept, but when I started working with the city of Olathe in 1987, and we were able to refine that plan, take it forward to the city council, and get it adopted. And that laid the groundwork for our trail system. That was in 1993, so 16 years later, you know, in a fast-growing city like Olathe, we've outgrown it, and we have kind of hesitated on taking another trails plan forward, as we wanted to include it in the Olathe Bicycle Transportation Plan as a, you know, all-encompassing plan, both on-road and off-road, recreation and transportation plan for bicycling, so that they were both integrated and coordinated together, you know, so that you could seamlessly go from one system to take another system over, as however works for someone to move about the city of Olathe. But yeah, I've been involved in that plan, you know, basically almost since its inception, but I can't take full credit for the first couple of years of study that was done on it. I wish I could. I think it'll be a great plan once everything's implemented. But yeah, we are just now in the processes of completing the last phase of Indian Creek Trail. It will take it to the ridge as it breaks over into the Cedar Creek Valley and the Coffee Creek Valley, and Kansas City, Missouri is also working on their last phase. So hopefully by end of next year, all of Indian Creek will be totally complete. You can go from the source water, the headwaters in Olathe, to where it dumps into the Blue River. That'll be a nice accomplishment. We've worked on a number of other trails. One will be finishing construction here in the next month, probably. We hope to have it done by National Trails Day. We have another trail in the southeast part of the city that will be going into construction this summer, and we hope to have finished before winter. And then when we get the Indian Creek Trail completed, that'll be in 2010. We have a third or a fourth trail, actually, that's in the design phase, and that one really reaches into the older central part of the city. It's been the real challenge in working along established neighborhoods and that, but it'll become a real asset once it is completed.
And how does this fit into the larger Metro Green plan?
Well, I was involved in that and the conception of Metro Green as well back in 1991. It was actually a present to the Kansas City area from the Prairie Gateway chapter of the American Society of Landscape Architects. Every year when the ASLA, as the National Association is called, hosts their convention, the local chapter contributes a project for the kind of the good of the community that they that those members are all working in. The one that we did was we came up with the Metro Green concept and the vision, as we called it. It was the first time there had ever been anything like that done. Typically, these projects that were done during a conference were a built physical, tangible product at the end. Maybe it's a pocket park, a memorial area, or something unique for that community. And to do a plan was a major undertaking. We worked very closely with Kansas State University's Landscape Architecture Department and Professor Raleigh there. And it was turned out to become one of the kind of formative plans to take Kansas City into the future, I think.
When that vision is completed, how many miles of trail is that going to amount to? How far will it reach?
I believe it's over 1,000 miles. It's a lot. So to be real honest, I don't expect to see it completed in my lifetime. Again, this is a vision. This is very long range, but yet you have to have those in a city of this size. And what we see it having done is to begin to affect other things. People are beginning to use Metro Green as a mechanism to look closer at their environment, at the protection of their streamway corridors, because they're beginning to see more value of those for various reasons, whether it be stormwater protection. And then you can capitalize with Metro Green by bringing applying a human use to it, which is key in this region of the country, is applying a human use to all the land. And if we can do trails to help set aside and preserve more of that valuable floodplain, then that's great. Let's do it.
How about transportation planning on a statewide level? You're involved with T-Link, right?
Yes, I was.
Tell me about that.
How about that, T-Link? It was a kind of first-time experience for the Department of Transportation, KDOT, as we call them. And it was a very heart, almost heartwarming process to see KDOT go through so much public involvement in their transportation planning. I think this was a first for them. They learned a lot from all of their various meetings they had around the state for over a year. I was fortunate to work on the Metropolitan Transportation Work Group, which kind of concentrated on those area transportation issues unique to the major metropolitan areas such as Kansas City, Wichita, Topeka, and that. There were a number of other work groups that focused on different things, from rural transportation, aviation, freight, and that, transit. And it was a great process. They learned a lot, and what I learned the most about KDOT is the desire is there. One of the downfalls of a citizen-oriented process is you have to have the support of all your citizens in order to achieve something. In the end, bicycle and pedestrian transportation didn't gain anything out of the T-Link as far as tangible results that we can expect in the next 6 years as far as funding recommendations. That's the frustrating part, but what was really kind of eye-opening is that actually at least 50% of the task force for the committee supported bicycle transportation. As we all know, with the economy and the state budgets and such as it is, it's going to require more work on the bicycling community's part to compete at that level. We need to be seeing 75-80% support when it comes to those types of committees making decisions on how the state funds are going to be met. So our organizations like Can Bike Walk, Johnson County Bicycle Club, and Oz Bicycle Club, the Lawrence Bicycle Club, we all have to have a lot more work to do so that we, KDOT, can really achieve the things that they would like to.
Does T-Link mean, is it transportation link? Is that what that means?
Yes, it's, and I can't remember, link, T-Link is an acronym, just as everything in any bureaucracy is, and to be real honest, I can't remember what the full acronym is, but that's just why everybody shortened it to T-Link.
Right, okay. Dale, what specifics are included in the draft Olathe Bicycle Transportation Plan, and then how would that guide Olathe into becoming a bicycle-friendly community, you know, as defined by the League of American Bicyclists? And for some background for our listeners, the two communities in Kansas that are noted, and you talked about them, are Lawrence for education and Shawnee for engineering and encouragement, both in the bronze category. And in looking at surrounding states, Nebraska had South Sioux City as had a bronze for engineering. And in Colorado, there were many cities listed both in the bronze and silver categories. I didn't see in any other border states, any other cities listed, but we did learn from talking with Eric Rogers earlier about Bike Week that Kansas City and perhaps even the metropolitan cities are going to apply for status.
Well, the Olathe Bicycle Transportation Plan in its draft form tries to address kind of all levels of bicyclist needs. And when I say all levels, that's all the riding abilities. And what we first did was do a bicycle use survey of the community. It was a statistically valid survey to get a measure of who bicycles, try to get a feel of how many people, at least in percentage basis, are bicycling and what they bicycle for. It was the first time the city had ever undertaken such a survey, and it was kind of a learning experience. I was a little nervous at first because I didn't know what the results would be, and if the results would have come back very dismal, the plan would have died right there. But they didn't. They came back that almost 60% of the households have a bicyclist in their house. And all kinds of different statistics that we could use to take forward into a plan. One of the interesting statistics that came out was that it said that if the proper facilities were there, over 10% of the community would bicycle for transportation purposes. You know, but only a few, only a much smaller percentage, feel that the facilities are there today, and so they don't feel safe and confident bicycling on the roads. That's both an education and an engineering issue. So from that survey, we started to draft, and look at what the city's process is for making improvements to the roadways. We came up with a means of modifying our arterial roadway systems, our new roadways, so that we can ultimately end up with bike lanes on arterial roads without acquiring any additional right-of-way over what would have been before. And in other words, right now the city gets 120 feet width of right-of-way for their standard four-lane arterial roadways. We can still build within that same 120 feet a system that has the four lanes for the cars. We can get two bike lanes in it, and we can get, if needed, a wide sidewalk on one side, all within that 120 feet, and done so, we feel, in a very safe manner. It kind of means that everybody has to give a little bit. The road, the traffic lanes are a little narrower. The bike lane might not be the ideal width for an arterial. But we think it can work. We think it's a politically acceptable way of doing it, because acquiring more land is very precious to particularly those people that own that property along it. They want every square foot that they can for development. And so that was a real challenge in working that out. But we have a system proposed, and it would create a kind of a grid network on a plus or minus 2 mile grid basis, that ultimately every arterial on a 2 mile grid would have bike lanes on it. And we thought that would be acceptable because we know those people that are more prone to ride on bike lanes have a little more savvy and a little more comfort riding in traffic. And so they can get a mile off either way and get to their destination. We also integrated in the same way a trail system for the more novice and basic cyclists to be able to use. And again, that's the trails that we see today, that as well as how to connect those together and assist a system for getting them closer to people, closer to them than they are now. Right now, our primary trail system is all where the major creeks are. We developed a system of connecting those creeks together, of creating loops within the community and around neighborhoods. So there's any number of ways that people can also take a trail and get close to where they may want to go. So if they're not comfortable riding on the road or even in bike lanes, they can take a trail close, maybe directly to, but hopefully within a half mile of where they would like to go. So that's kind of the physical aspects of the plan. We also know that education is a huge component of it, and we have a section in it on increasing our outreach and our education, whether that be through the recreation program and getting more active in cyclist education. We know that law enforcement is an issue, so the education is critical for our law enforcement officers as well, to make sure they are all up to speed. And what we call the equality as well is critical, in that so that all laws are enforced equally across the board. If a cyclist breaks a law, they need to be ticketed. Mm-hmm. If a motorist breaks a law, they equally need to be ticketed. And so there's no exceptions, no favoritism given to any one class of roadway user.
So does the league then look at kind of the overall plan when you submit? Is that?
Well, the league looks at more than just a plan. That's one of the criteria, is that you do have a plan. Now, it can be just an education plan. It can be a focused plan. If you're submitting for a bicycle-friendly community and education is the direction you are going, you can have an education plan. But they do look at how broad-based is your approach. They look at what you've been able to implement. They look at what you have in place for being able to continue funding a program to continue the development, and whether that be development on the ground or development in programs for training and education and outreach. They look at a pretty broad spectrum of things, and it's a challenge getting that award. You gotta do some work. You gotta be proving yourself, and you've gotta be doing some clinics, which is good. It should be that way.
But it sounds like the Olathe, you're trying to be have a broad approach to it in the things that you've done and the things that you're planning. Correct.
Correct. We have. Yeah. That's kind of why we do have, you know, the bike lanes that we have built. There's a number of the bike lanes that are not on a formal plan as such, but such as the bike lanes that are under construction right now on the Lone Elm Road. As you go south out of Olathe, you know, Lone Elm Road years ago when I moved to town, it was a heavily used bicycle corridor. The Johnson County Bicycle Club had rides that started on it. In fact, you might have read in my bio that I happened upon a Johnson County Bicycle Club one day. It was on Lone Elm Road. Well, Lone Elm Road today, or before they started the construction, had changed complexion tremendously. It had become an industrial corridor. Truck traffic was upwards of 15 to 20%, and these were large trucks, dump trucks, gravel trucks, semis. So they were, and it was a two-lane road. So it was not a bicycle-friendly road anymore, and I didn't even ride it, and I'll ride about any road. But that one I had written off until such time it became was improved. And it took the cycling community stepping up and being heard to get bike lanes added to that project. They did. The city of Olathe submitted an application for T21 enhancement funds, and they were awarded it. And so now when the road is completed and the interchange is open, there will be bike lanes the entire length of that project and over the interstate through the new interchange that they're building.
Dale, how have you been able to convince others, you know, within the government or in the community to have put these bike lanes in on, you know, 143rd Street, Dennis Avenue, Woodland, Ridgeview? You've talked about Lone Elm, and then 127th Street now too.
Been pretty fortunate. I'll have to admit, one, in my working with the city of Olathe, they've allowed me to submit the applications. They were all, except for Woodland Road, all of the other bike lanes have been funded through the Transportation Enhancement Program, which is a component of the various federal highway transportation plans that have been in existence now for the last almost 18 years. And the city councils have consistently allowed those to be submitted. They don't have to allow them. They approve every application that gets submitted. So they're willing to do it as long as we can get that federal assistance, which has been a key part of it. And so we've been kind of building on that Olathe Bicycle Transportation Plan almost even before we had it a formal process. You know, there's some things that were pretty easy to read in Olathe, like 127th Street. When that overpass went in, that was instead of an interchange with all of its ramps and traffic signals and everything, it was an overpass. And since we know that interstates are huge barriers for bicyclists and interchanges are typically quite dangerous, you know, with all of the conflicting traffic patterns, then an overpass was going to become a funnel for bicyclists. So that was actually, you know, was not a hard sell to explain that to the governing body and say, you know, we need to go after some funds on that. And so we did. We've been very fortunate to get those 2 miles of bike lanes funded, and they've just started construction on the first mile.
Great.
So what's tougher politically, to get bike lanes approved where you might get enhancements funds for it, or to get trails built where the city might have to pay for some on its own?
I'll just say that money talks. If you can get the funding for it, they'll let you build it. Trails are easier, though. One, there's more people using them. You know, it's not just for the bicyclists. As you said in your first broadcast, Randy, there's any and everybody using it for all different reasons, for walking, running, others with their baby carriages and dogs, people walking their dogs on leashes, and rollerbladers, roller skaters, and I guess skiers.
And that's right, roller skiers.
Yep, right. And so, that serves a kind of, I'll just say, a broader base of the population. And so it's easier for the council to justify that. That becomes very critical for the bicycling community that does have a passion and a desire for bicycle commuting and transportation and on-road bicycling to really be involved in their community. And it doesn't always have to be doesn't mean that you just, every time there's a project meeting, you go and, raise your hand and you talk about it and then disappear again. People really need to take an interest in their community, and they'll learn all kinds of things that makes them a better citizen as well as a better bicycle advocate.
Has there been any discussion of of on-street markings such as Sharrow's?
We've talked about it in the plan, and our engineers are receptive to it, although they're a little bit, hesitant at this point. I think there are some places where it is very applicable, and I think as our numbers get up, as more of the system gets in place, we may begin to see some in the older part of the town. Where we'll want to, as part of the plan, have some bicycle routes. Just have the signs supporting them. It's a form of pavement marking that we can use to supplement the bike routes to help guide people through town and make motorists more aware of where the bicyclists are and kind of guide bicyclists into the right part of the road. So I think we'll see them in the future.
You've been the advocacy director at the Johnson County Bike Club from 96 up through just this last year. In addition to the bike lanes and trails in the Olathe area, what else has been going on in advocacy in the county?
In Johnson County, in this area, KDOT is doing another major transportation study. It's more focused on, it's called the 5-County Transportation Study. So it encompasses Leavenworth, Wyandotte, Johnson, Miami, and Douglas counties. And since it is KDOT, it's primarily looking at their highway system, the state and federal highway system. Probably biggest for Johnson County, a couple of projects, the 69 highway improvements and expansion of that, upgrades to that, and then the K7. We realized that bicyclists aren't going to be down on these roads bicycling on them. But right now we use some of those, particularly K7. K7 is one of our few crossings over the Kansas River. And we need to preserve that access, one, across the river. Right now a lot of our roads that cross K7 are at grade with signals. Ultimately, those will become interchanges, which will create multiple signaled intersections or maybe another type of road configuration. Bicyclists' needs need to be considered much more than they have in the past to keep K7 from becoming another I-35 barrier. So there's things like that. The K10 corridor, future expansions to that are very likely. And how will bicyclists get along that route? There's discussion of what's called the K10 Smart Trail. That would be more of a trail paralleling K10, maybe in the right-of-way or maybe paralleling close to the right-of-way within the community, that would go from basically Lenexa Olathe to Lawrence. That would somewhat help to replace the 83rd Street corridor that we're now prohibited from cycling on a portion of it. So there are some things in that study that bicyclists need to be involved in and vocal and participatory on.
Speaking of 87th Street, tell us that story. How'd that get banned?
It got banned, well, it depends on who you talk to. If you talk to the council members for the city of DeSoto at that time, which is a totally different body right now, it got started from their side, from a small group of rude cyclists. But if you talk to the cyclists, it has a totally different story. Not to say that some rude behavior did not occur, and that's unfortunate if it did. But the aspect that, you know, we need to be able to share the road in order to get along, you know, is an educational thing. There was just some attitudes, I think, on both the motorists and the bicyclist part in that. On that particular road, it was a very heavily used road, a narrow, two-lane, windy, hilly road. And so it had some challenges as the traffic on it was increasing, as Lenexa and Western Lenexa and Shawnee was growing, as DeSoto was growing, more people were going back and forth between those communities. And so tensions were rising, and apparently there was a flashpoint, and the city council made the decision. The cyclists did what they could as a community to prevent it, but it was pretty much a foregone conclusion if you were at that public meeting that it was going to happen. And unfortunately, you know, it still is there, technically. You know, it's still going to take some time. There's still not a good route to ride through that corridor. That's one of the things the K-10 Smart Corridor Trail could help replace. You know, it probably won't get addressed until that road gets improved. And that's unfortunately going to be quite a few years out.
Tell us about your involvement in Can Bike Walk. How did the organization start, and why did it start? And, you know, what is your role as vice president?
When it got started, it was probably about the third attempt to start a statewide organization. And this kind of goes back to what I mentioned earlier in our discussions about how things are looking up. More and more people are getting involved, and Can Bike Walk is an example of that. As I said, this is about the third attempt. I've met with several different people over at different times trying to get this a group like this started, and there just wasn't the footing and the base support there to get it going and started. So this I guess it would have been almost a year and a half ago now, Brent Hugh, the executive director for Missouri Bicycle Federation, and was going to be giving a presentation at a Kansas Trails Council in Lawrence. And so he knew there would be a bunch of like-minded people that might have an interest in improving bicycling in Kansas. And he helped organize a group of people, say, hey, we want to talk about this. Come here, meet here. Here's a time. Here's a place. And so a group did, and that the majority of the board, not all of it, though, came out of that meeting, the board for the Can Bike Walk. We didn't know what we were going to be called at that time. And so over the last year and a half, we've been able to get our board appointed or organized, get our a positive bank account. It's not as big as we would like it to be, of course, but, you know, that all comes in time. We got our 501c3 set up, and we've already beginning to start on several initiatives. So my role as vice president, probably not a specific defined role other than, you know, support the president when you can and need to, and, you know, kind of help out just wherever there help needs to be. With my background and the experiences that I've had, anyway, I try to bring that forward to the board and help in those types of discussions and issues. Everybody has different expertises as they bring, such as Randy's web experience and ability to communicate in with all the technologies and that to people across the country as well as in Kansas. And everybody brings different experiences. Cecile had done 501c3 formatting before and forms, and I think that was the first thing we got accomplished just because of the expertise that she had and her background in that. So we have one of the things that was really critical and one of the things that I stressed early on is that we need a board that's geographically dispersed so it represents all of Kansas. That was one of the failings the first couple of times, is that everybody that came was always from Johnson County and Douglas County, and there was no other participation from outside, and so it became another northeastern Kansas organization. And this time, though, we have a president from Emporia, we have board members from Pittsburgh and Manhattan, a secretary from Wichita area, or treasurer is from here, from this area. It's great. We have some of that geographic representation that we need. We'd love to get somebody from further out west, like Dodge City, Garden City, Hayes. I think it's going to work this time. I think we've got some solid footing. It's the longest lasting one we've had so far, so that's a positive sign.
And that gives you a good voice then, too, when you're approaching the legislature or policy or government agencies, right, with that broad-based.
It does, exactly, because, you know, then each one of the board members can contact their representative from their area and say, I'm on the board of this organization, and you always have to give what your organization's address is, but you can say, but I live in your district.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and that's critical. The next challenge that we have is getting our membership base up so that we have members from across the state. So that we can say we have members from Dodge City, Garden City, Goodland, Hayes, Salina, you know, cover the state. And it doesn't have to be I rattled off the larger cities in those areas, but it doesn't have to be those cities. It can be the Beloits and the Parsons, the Chanutes, the smaller towns as well. And even the rural counties. I know a cyclist in St. Francis, Kansas, of all places. And he's an avid cyclist. He's a great cyclist, and I need to get a hold of him and get him on board.
Do you know how much has been raised? You said you had a small account, but I know there was a big effort, and you had the matching challenge through the Johnson County Bike Club, too. Was that successful?
Yes, it was. In fact, it was the Johnson County. We far exceeded their deadline. They were very generous in giving us a donation, and then on top of that, a $1,000 matching grant, and they actually gave us through 2009 to raise that $1,000 as a match. We raised it by the end of 2008. So we were very generous that way. The Kansas City Bicycle Club, they have members in Kansas. They contributed $1,000 as well. This particular donation from the Johnson County Bicycle Club, I think, was their third donation. They've been have been very supportive of the organization. They've been fortunate in being able to. They've had some very successful rides, and so they were in the position that they could, and we're just glad that they see the value and the importance of it in the future of cycling in Kansas. We hope to get out to the other clubs and get more participation and involvement from them, not just financially as well, but also in outreach and participation in advocacy events and issues.
We want to do a podcast actually on Can Bike Walk because we wanted to cover more broadly today. But what are like the top two issues for Can Bike Walk?
Probably right now, what I see as one of our leading issues is the what I'll call the equity for cyclists. That is equity on the road and equity in the laws and the enforcement of the laws. And in that one word, you can cover a lot of territory. Equity in our laws comes down to what most of us think of as advocacy, and that is getting the roadways improved. You know, right now, the roads are designed for the automobile, even though we have the same rights to the roads as they do. They're not designed with our for our needs mm-hmm. and our safety in mind. So it's an inequity issue to me. In law enforcement, equity there is applying is several aspects of that as well, applying the laws equally. One of the most common criticisms I have had over the years, whether it be from in a state legislative hearing or a city council meeting, is those bicyclists are always out there breaking the laws. Why should we build facilities for them? And I never refute that laws are not broken by bicyclists, but I will counter to say that we build roads for motorists, and motorists break the laws. Yeah, it doesn't make it right, but what we need to do is be designing for the safety of all the users. And, you know, so there's an equity in enforcement of the laws. If the public felt the laws were being equally enforced, then that would remove that argument. And I, you know, if I run a stop sign on a bicycle, I should be ticketed is how I feel about it, which is why I stop, you know, routinely. The other aspect is in the courts, equity in the courts, and how when some of the tragic incidents that we have had happen occur, that the courts handle of an injury or a fatality involving a bicyclist the same as they would if it was a motorist that was injured or killed. And that's all we can expect and all we should expect. I don't think that's happening right now. And there's some statutory reasons, I think, for that. And we're working on this year on getting those statutes rewritten, getting proposals for them so that they could get introduced at the correct time. And that, I think those are the two of the key issues. If we could accomplish some of that then get some visibility on it, then bicyclists themselves will begin to see, hey, Can Bike Walk is here to help me, to help improve my life and make my time on the road safer. And they'll be worth my time and energy and money.
Those are very important ones. I know, you know, from leading a ride that, you know, I make sure that, you know, we abide by traffic signals and stuff. And you hate when you see bicyclists go by and just go, you know, right through a stop sign or a red light. On the other hand, it, you know, I've seen, there's, I think, some states that have adopted a thing that a stop sign to a cyclist is a yield sign. And I think what, you know, a motorist doesn't understand or a non-cyclist is that, you know, you have the momentum and you are stopping, but you're not coming to a complete stop, you know, and taking your foot out of the clip, you know, to stop. And I think that would help in education and understanding that, you know, you're coming up, you're looking every which way and then going through. And then on your second point, I mean, just from the cyclists that have gotten hit, you know, just in this area, it is a huge equity issue. And what is it specifically about the statute that doesn't allow that?
I'm not in the taking the lead on that. But as I understand it, you know, there's certain level of kind of almost like egregious action on the part of the motorist has to be proved that it warrants a vehicular manslaughter charge as opposed to a reckless driving or careless driving or inattentive driving. And there's a large gap between that. District attorneys have said we can't prove that high level of negligence. on the part of the motorist, you know, to warrant and get that charge through the courts. And so there needs to be a kind of a middle level between inattentive driving and vehicular manslaughter that is provable in court. And it could simply be, it may have been, very well have been inattentive driving, but the consequences of that inattentive driving, once those meet a certain degree of seriousness, it triggers it to that higher level, which with the increased penalty and for that type of driving behavior. And it needs to be written such that it's not just to protect cyclists, but to protect the public and not just bicyclists.
Right, and pedestrians, correct.
Right.
Yeah, because inattentive driving could, you know, in hitting another car, you might cause damage, but not, correct. You know, physical damage. So
I think it's going to become, as you're hearing more things about other forms of inattentive driving, whether it's texting and being on the cell phone and things like that, people in the public are becoming more and more aware of the various distractions that are out there now, and unfortunately coming to see some of the consequences of those distractions. And so I think it's going to be able to happen here in Kansas. Hopefully we'll get it through the next legislative period. It sometimes takes several years to build the support for such a change. The legislatures are not prone to change such that type of legislation on a first-time basis. They want to make sure everything is covered and this is what the public truly wants. But enough other states are getting this type of legislation enacted that, you know, that gives us more support and more ammunition to take forward too.
Well, good luck with that. That's very, very important. Well, Dale, I'd love to talk longer, and I know Randy would too, but I know both of you have a Can Bike Walk Board of Directors meeting in just a few minutes, so I want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us today on the podcast, and take care, and thank you for all you have done to promote bicycling in our communities, as it is very, very much appreciated, and I really think of you and the work that's been done every Saturday morning as I organize a ride that uses many of the bike lanes on the Olathe bike on the road. So I thank you very much for that.
Well, you're welcome. And, you know, that's why we do it. You know, is that right there? Like you said, we just want people to be out and to use them and be safe and feel comfortable on the road.
Take care.
All right.
Thanks, Dale.
Thank you.
We appreciate you downloading episode 2 of the Kansas Cyclist Podcast, and we do hope that you will subscribe so that you will not miss out on future episodes. We have a lot of interesting news, information, and interviews that we have planned for future episodes, so please come back. Also, please take the time and leave your feedback by writing to podcast@kansascyclist.com. Take care. And don't forget to sign up for the Car Free Challenge. Cycle safe, everyone.